Knock it off.
All three of them stilled when the door to the room swung open.
What's going on in here?
Mr. Sims filled the height of the doorway, his dark stare keeping them silent. Owen wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, tasted his own blood.
We were wrestling,
Chris announced. Owen stood speechless.
Wrestling.
Alex blinked a few times, then nodded. Mr. Sims turned his stare toward Owen.
Is that right?
Not trusting his voice, he nodded. Sims didn't buy it, but he wasn't concerned enough about their welfare to question further. Sims pointed to Owen's mouth.
Keep it off the face!
He closed the door, and Chris shoved Alex one last time. Jason woke with his heart in his throat. His hand reached out to find Rachel gone from his side. His eyes shot open, and the room came into focus. Fog shaded the windows, casting gray light into the room. Noise from the shower in the master bathroom was music to his ears. Rachel. She hadn't left in the middle of the night. The dream he had right before opening his eyes floated in his memory. He was walking around Rachel's home to find all of her personal belongings gone. No clothes or pictures on the wall. Owen's room was bare except his bed and a schoolbook on his desk. They simply vanished, and even though Jason was vaguely aware he was in the center of a dream, panic rose in his heart. The water in the shower turned off, and the sound of the shower door opening and closing had him envisioning the woman inside. Jason's body responded to the image. He closed his eyes and told himself to calm down. Exploring new positions would be the last thing Rachel would be interested in doing now.
You're up.
Just when his dick started to calm, he caught sight of her. She was in one of his dress shirts, the buttons not completely done all the way up. It stopped at the tops of her smooth thighs and swished around her legs as she walked toward him. Rachel was drying her hair with a towel, her face fresh from the shower. Jason squirmed on the bed and hoped she didn't notice his discomfort or reaction. They had other things to do.
You look rested.
I am, surprisingly.
She planted herself on the edge of the bed and smiled down at him.
I hope you don't mind about the shirt. It's all you have in there.
Mind? I'll never wear that shirt again without thinking of you in it.
She was smiling brighter now. He liked having that effect on her.
I've been thinking, she started.
Owen?
Of course.
She tossed the towel aside and leaned over him on the bed. I need to find a contractor, one who can determine if there is lead in the walls of the house or any other dangers the Colemans are accusing me of.
Jason rested his hands behind his head. If he finds something, it will substantiate their claim.
If they find something, then I need to know that and address it like any concerned parent would once something has been brought to their attention. I'm not a licensed environmental health professional or a contractor. I'm a new homeowner without a reason to question the health of my house. If they don't find anything, we're good.
Do you think there is an issue?
I think the Colemans accused me of neglect, and the court jumped first and asked questions later.
She rested a hand on his chest. If there is an issue with lead, then I would guess it would come up in my blood work. Which brings me to my next question.
Who is my doctor?
Rachel leaned forward, kissed his chest.
You're so smart.
He reached for her when she pulled back.
You're sexy.
She moved into his kiss and let her lips linger. Jason was the one who kept the good morning kiss from becoming more.
I'm happy to see you smiling.
Yesterday I was stuck in a cell. Today I'm free and have the ability to do something about this situation. Until Clive calls with a time for the emergency hearing he is requesting, we can't do a legal thing to get Owen back.
Legal being the key word.
She searched his eyes. I would never ask you to do something illegal.
But?
After a deep breath, she said, "That doesn't mean I won't. I'll play by the rules as long as there is hope that this is all going to go away. But if they try and take Owen against his will, I'm keeping my promise to him and Emily."
"And his dream will have been a premonition." "Then we'll just have to keep that from happening."
They started with Jason's doctor, who brought her in for a physical and the requested blood test. They would have the results by late afternoon, which gave them the rest of the morning to find and hire a contractor. Rachel walked into her cold, dark house and went directly to Owen's room, even though she knew he wasn't there. Jason stood silently behind her.
"You okay?"
She shrugged. "He's at school. Or should be, in any case. Not that I'm allowed to text him to find out."
"This can't last."
She wasn't so sure of that. "And I shouldn't have met a half a dozen hookers from the streets of New York. But I have." Rachel turned toward her bedroom, and Jason followed. "If there is one lesson I've learned in the past year, it's that anything can happen. And with my luck lately, I would go on to say that if that anything is something bad, it will happen."
"Hey, what about me?"
Jason smiled as he asked the question. "Not you. Although it might have been better if you worked in the pizza joint across the street from the office."
"You wouldn't have noticed me if I made pizzas for a living."
She paused. "I like pizza."
Pizza. Now I'm hungry."
Rachel pushed him toward the door. "Then pop something in the oven. I need to change." She was still wearing his shirt and her pants from the day before, since she didn't have clothes at his house.
"I don't cook,"
he complained. "Follow the instructions on the box."
"But
you fly planes and run a zillion-dollar business. I'm sure you can cook a pizza from the freezer."
"You're bossy when you're on a mission."
She pushed him all the way out her door and closed it behind him. The contractor arrived about the same time the pizza was delivered. Apparently, Jason was allergic to turning on an oven. The contractor called himself T. Just T. Rachel waited for him to clarify his name with something along the lines of, "T is for Tanner, Travis, Tom." But nope, just T.
"Well, T, what I need is an environmental report on this house."
"Specifically lead paint and asbestos,"
Jason said. "But test for anything considered toxic."
"Are you trying to find a problem for insurance or something?"
"Oh no, nothing like that. It's personal."
"Have you been sick?"
"Nope." T looked confused. "Check for mold, anything that can make you ill." He gave the living room a once-over.
"Fresh paint?"
"Yeah, I've painted almost every room in the place."
"I'm going to have to dig into some of it for testing."
"Whatever you have to do. If you can do it close to the floor or away from where the eye looks and not skew the test results, that would be great."
"Okay, ma'am. You're the boss."
He went back out to his truck, and Jason said in her ear,
"You're kind of sexy when you're bossy."
"Huh." She opened the pizza box, and her stomach reminded her they'd skipped breakfast.
"You woke up horny."
"Did not."
She tilted her head, offered her best, "Don't lie to me," stare.
"Okay, maybe a little."
Rachel lowered her head.
"I blame the image of you in my shirt."
He grabbed a piece of pizza and shoved it in his mouth. She thrust a napkin into his free hand and sat down. 2 hours later, T walked into the living room to let them know he was finished. "Anything you can tell us now?"
"I scraped the walls and my kit doesn't show lead."
Rachel grasped Jason's hand, hope filling her chest.
"But that's not to say there isn't lead in there. I have to send it to a testing center to make sure the coat of paint over it isn't messing up the chemistry."
"How long will that take?"
3 days." "Can we rush it?"
Jason asked.
"That is rushing."
"Anything else?" Rachel asked.
"There isn't any evidence of asbestos, but if there was at some point and it wasn't removed properly, you might find some in the insulation in the attic."
Rachel frowned.
Let me guess, you're sending it out for testing?
I would suggest that isn't necessary. But you said you wanted everything I questioned tested. It is an old house, and back when this was built, we didn't know much about what made us sick.
Okay.
There's mold down in the basement.
Oh, no.
T smiled.
You and everyone else on this block. It's not black mold, but I did treat the area with the bleach you had by your laundry supplies.
So it's not a problem?
It's smelly, but not toxic.
Does it need to be sent off to a lab? Jason asked.
Nope.
That's all?
You wanted to know about hidden dangers, right?
Rachel wondered what she had missed that they hadn't covered.
Anything.
Well, those stairs leading down into your basement should be removed and replaced.
She released a long breath.
Stairs?
All he had was old stairs?
It's a decent-sized space, but I wouldn't want to be lugging my laundry down there. Cold and damp, draws lots of insects. I'm not a fan of spiders.
Rachel glanced at Jason, then back at T.
Spiders. Stairs and spiders is all you found?
You sound disappointed.
He tore off the sheet he'd been working with and handed her a copy.
Not at all. Please contact me as soon as you know about the lab results.
You got it.
Jason shook the man's hand, and they watched him walk away. Rachel leaned against the door with a smile.
Nothing.
He didn't find anything.
He didn't seem too concerned the lab would disagree with him.
We need to call Clive.
By 2, Rachel was given a clean bill of health, not a speck of lead in her blood. Much like T, the doctor explained that there was always a chance that another person in the house would test positive, and that she should have Owen tested as soon as possible, if, in fact, there was lead detected in the old paint in the house. Clive called just after 3, telling them the hearing was scheduled for 8 in the morning the following day. Which, for Rachel, wasn't good news. Owen is stuck in the foster home for another night. She glanced at her cell phone, wishing desperately to contact him.
I'll call Nathan, have him talk to Owen, and make sure he's okay.
Even though the day had been a success, Rachel sat on her couch, her eyes blankly staring at the wall in front of her. Jason came back into the room and sat beside her.
Nathan is calling him.
She leaned her head on Jason's shoulder.
Hey, what happened to your smile?
I've done all I can. It's not up to me anymore. This is going to come down to my word against the Colemans. My lack of family ties. How can I prove I didn't flee the country just to see if I could if I needed to?
Jason tightened his arm around her.
Let's see. You didn't hijack a plane. You didn't cause the plane in Costa Rica to crash. I'm the one that suggested Owen come with us. And we all came back. This is all going to work out.
They are his blood relatives. TJ is Owen's dad. It's nearly impossible for me to stop the man from taking custody of his son.
The argument ran through her brain like a mantra. Jason kissed the side of her head.
Why don't you pack a bag and stay with me until all this blows over?
Her eyes fell on the empty space where the Christmas tree had been up until the end of December. They hadn't pushed the furniture back in place before they'd flown off to Central America.
Sitting here is just going to depress me.
He helped her off the couch.
Go and pack. I'll take the trash out.
When she was done filling a small suitcase with some essentials, she stopped by the pile of bills she'd neglected. She opened a side pocket of her bag and shoved it all inside. Her laptop became part of the overnight bag with the intention of making sure they had a house to come back to once Owen was home. She left the porch light on, closed the shades, and locked the door on their way out.
Chapter 22.
I'm not going back there.
Owen pocketed his cell phone after he finished talking with Nathan. Ford and Lionel sat with him in the high school gym, offering teenage advice.
You can stay with one of us,
Ford said.
My mom would be okay with you staying the night.
They'll just come get me from your place, Lionel.
No, I need to disappear.
They both looked at him like he was crazy.
And go where?
Owen had been thinking about that all day long. In his mind, he had a couple of options. Both were places no one would ever think they'd find him.
The police will question you both, and I don't need you ratting me out.
We'd never do that.
The cops always get to the truth, and if you don't know it, you can't tell.
What are you going to do about school?
Ford asked.
Owen shrugged. School will be there when all this goes away.
Lionel and Ford exchanged glances.
And what if it doesn't? What if the court sides with your grandparents?
Then school won't matter, because I'm not living with them. I'll really run away then.
He'd get word to Rachel, and she'd flee with him. That was the pact they'd made over his mother's grave, and he was going to keep her to it. His cell phone buzzed in his pocket.
Aw, man.
What?
It's Mr. Sims.
Lionel glanced at the screen on his phone.
The dude that let the other kid punch you?
Yeah.
Owen texted the man, said he was in the library finishing up a project.
I gotta go. So you aren't going to run away?
Owen shook his head and handed Ford his phone.
The last time you saw me was in the library. When you looked, you found my cell phone in your backpack. Don't you need your phone? So they can trace it? Come on, man, think!
Lionel's eyes were wide.
You're really going to run. I'm really not going back to that place.
They all stood.
Are you going to be okay?
I'll be fine. And when Rachel talks to you guys, get her alone and tell her my mother didn't raise a fool and that I said I'd be okay.
Owen hated that he was going to worry her, but he couldn't exactly tell her where he was going without getting her in trouble.
Wait!
He took his cell phone back and turned the camera on himself and hit video.
Hey, Rachel. I know you're going to be pissed and worried. I'm sorry for that. But I can't go back to that place. And I'm not living with the hag and her chubby sidekick. And if my dad is behind all of this, well, fuck him. This wasn't right. Once all the adults start acting like adults, I'll be back. And if they can't...
He paused.
Well, my mom didn't raise a fool. I love you.
He turned his phone off and handed it back.
Stall them if you can.
He calculated how long it would take to get to where he was going and decided to throw everyone off his trail.
I can be in the city in a couple of hours.
Dude!
Ford yelled after him. Owen ran out of the gym without looking back. Jason and Rachel walked through the door of his home and were greeted with the scent of food filling the kitchen. Rachel turned to him.
Do you have a cook?
He shook his head no while saying,
Sometimes.
Several voices drew them into the center of the home. Jason was never so happy to see his brothers, and, even more, their wives. Monica wrapped Rachel in a warm embrace.
How are you holding up?
Rachel was an instant water fountain of tears. Mary flanked her other side, and the three of them walked out of the kitchen. Mary turned to Glenn.
Don't let that burn,
she told him, pointing toward the stove.
It's boiling water,
Glenn said. She glared.
Well, I guess that answered the question about how Rachel is doing,
Trent said. He pushed Glenn out of the way and stepped in wherever Mary had left off cooking.
Is it bad?
Glenn asked. Jason looked at the backs of the women as they talked quietly to Rachel.
She's held it together really well most of the day.
Any word?
It's like watching grass grow. The only one talking to Owen is Nathan. The lawyer is moving things along, but we won't know any more until after tomorrow's hearing.
And the house?
Trent asked.
Clear. I knew it would be. We won't have those official papers for a couple of days.
The three of them shook their heads in silence. The back door opened, and Nathan walked in with a nod.
Hello, gentlemen. I smelled food.
Trent turned back to the stove and added dry pasta to the boiling water.
Hey,
Jason greeted his friend.
How is he?
Nathan found the women with his eyes and lowered his voice.
He's not happy. Had a little scuffle last night with the other boys at the home he's at.
What?
Nathan lifted a hand in the air.
Settle? It sounded like a simple pissing match to see who wore the bigger boots. Nothing you three didn't do, I'm sure. He's more upset about not being able to talk to Rachel. But he cares too much for her well-being to risk the phone call.
You told him she was in jail?
Nathan looked directly in Jason's eyes.
He already guessed.
Can you imagine what we would have done if someone put our mom in jail?
Glenn asked. Jason shook his head.
Yeah, but Owen's smarter than we were. Let's hope so,
Trent said. The women returned to the kitchen. All of them had been crying. Jason felt his system short-circuiting. He could hardly handle one tear-filled woman. Three was way out of his wheelhouse. Apparently, with age came understanding. Nathan came to the rescue.
Do you all feel better now?
The three of them looked at one another and offered silent nods, and then jumped in to finish fixing dinner.
Have you spoken to your parents?
Mary asked Rachel during dinner. She pushed the food around on her plate as she talked.
No, I'm not sure how to tell them I was in jail.
It really is unbelievable,
Monica said. I doubt any parent wants to hear their kid is in jail. Besides, they told me from the beginning that the Colemans weren't going to blend into the background, regardless of where I lived.
What do you mean?
Glenn asked. Rachel didn't hear the question.
Rachel took the job with us to move closer, to try to appease Owen's grandparents and avoid a custody battle.
Rachel glanced up and caught up on the conversation.
I didn't realize how screwed up they'd be.
Mary placed her hand over Rachel's.
You tried to do the right thing.
A lot of good that did. I should have beelined to the border and learned Spanish.
What did Emily tell you about them?
Rachel gave up on trying to eat and left her fork and her food. She didn't know them. TJ had told her that they were controlling parents that didn't give him the opportunity to live, which is why Em refused to tie him down. She saw how he fled when he had the chance and didn't want Owen to become dependent on him and then have him disappear. The phone in the house shot two short rings.
Expecting anyone?
Glenn asked Jason. Jason shook his head and got up to answer it.
Hello?
What is that?
Rachel asked.
The gate at the entrance of the house,
Mary told her. Jason glanced around the room, his gaze stopping at Rachel. Her heart kicked hard in her chest.
Come on in.
Jason pressed a button on the phone before hanging it up.
Who is it?
Glenn asked.
Local police.
Rachel started to shake. Her breath caught high in her throat. They walked to the door and watched while Jason opened it. Mary stood at Rachel's right, Monica to her left. The squad car drove up, and two uniformed officers stepped out. A radio squealed from one of their shoulders. Their belts clicked as they approached.
Good evening.
Rachel heard a chorus of polite hellos.
Which one of you is Rachel Price?
Did everyone just move closer to her, or was the universe sucking air from her lungs?
What is this about?
Jason asked. The officer speaking introduced himself and kept scanning the lot of them. His eyes fell on her.
It appears Owen has run away,
he said without preamble. If not for the women at her side, there was a strong possibility that Rachel would have fallen over.
Run where?
She cried. Both officers focused their gazes on her.
We were hoping you might know.
Oh, God. Owen.
I don't know where he went,
Ford told them. They stood in Ford's home with the boy's father at his side.
"But you knew he was leaving?"
the police officer asked. Rachel had a strong desire to shake the kid. He knew something he wasn't telling them.
"He said he wasn't going back to that place."
"What place?" Rachel asked.
"The foster home. He had a fat lip,"
Ford announced.
"The kids there talk with their fists."
Rachel squeezed her eyes closed. "Owen doesn't fight."
"Yeah, that's why he had a fat lip."
Ford glared at the cops as if they were to blame.
"If everyone just left him where he was, none of this would have happened."
Rachel pushed the dread in her heart away and tried to focus. "Did he leave any clue as to where he went?" Ford shuffled from foot to foot. "He knew something."
"Ford, he's 15 and it's winter. Please. He might think he's all tough, but we're from California. It's supposed to be in the teens tonight,"
Rachel told him. Jason placed an arm around her shoulders.
He said something about the city."
"New York?"
Ford shook his head.
"Might be. He didn't say much. Just that he could be there in a couple of hours."
Rachel turned to Jason. "He could have taken the train."
"And gone where, hon? The city might only be 5 miles long, but you know how vast it is."
The thought of him alone in the city had her close to tears.
"We have to look."
Jason placed his hands on her face.
"We'll look."
She nodded a couple of times.
"Is there anything else?"
the officer asked.
"Yeah."
Ford removed a phone from his pocket.
"I found Owen's cell phone in my backpack."
The police had given her hope that they'd be able to trace a call from his number the moment he used it. Now that hope was gone. Rachel took it from Ford's fingertips and started to scan his recent texts. Many were back and forth from his friends, and a few were from Nathan. She scanned through recent calls while the officers questioned Ford. She opened his pictures to see if maybe he'd taken a selfie at the home he was in. Anything to give her a clue. The first thing she saw was an image of Owen's bruised face. She pressed the triangle to see the video he'd taken.
"Hey, Rachel."
Owen's voice caught her throat with emotion. The room went silent, and everyone turned to her. Jason placed his hand under hers when she started to shake.
"I know you're going to be pissed and worried. I'm sorry for that. But I can't go back to that place. And I'm not living with the hag and her sidekick. And if my dad is behind all of this, well, fuck him. This wasn't right. Once all the adults start acting like adults, I'll be back. And if they can't, well, my mom didn't raise a fool. I love you."
The screen stilled.
"Was that Owen?"
one of the officers asked. She nodded and turned the phone his way and watched the video again.
"Does any of that mean anything to you?"
"The hag is how he refers to his grandmother. The sidekick is the grandfather." Jason glanced at the officer.
"Needless to say, he isn't interested in living with them."
"And the fat lip, that's from the kids at the foster home?"
the cop asked Ford.
"That's what he told us,"
Ford told them.
"Can't blame the kid for not wanting to go back,"
Ford's father added.
"He could have stayed with us." "I told him that," said Ford, "but he thought the cops would just take him back there."
The lead officer shook his head.
"Not if there is evidence of abuse."
"There wasn't any abuse at Rachel's house," Ford argued.
"I hear you, kid. I don't always like my job."
He turned to Rachel.
"Is there anything else in this that offers any clue?"
They watched the video twice more.
"No."
She wished there was. The officers thanked Ford and his family and asked them to call if they heard from Owen, and then the family walked out onto the frozen sidewalk.
"Now what?"
Rachel asked the officers.
"We'll give Owen's picture to the local police and NYPD, and have him taken in if they see him."
She waited for an and. When her stare was met with silence, she said it herself.
And?
He's a runaway.
What does that mean?
Jason asked.
Teenage runaways aren't anything new. We put them in the database, pick them up when we find them, and return them home.
But you don't look for them?
Outrage rested behind Rachel's question.
Miss Price, have you seen the streets of Manhattan? They are filled with teenage runaways from all over this country.
I'm sorry. You seem like a nice lady. You obviously care about this boy.
I'm the only family he knows.
We understand. But there really isn't anything we can do at this point.
If he contacts you, tell him to come home.
He was forced to leave my home.
Let him know that if Ford's parents are okay with him staying there for a while, until your custody matters are resolved, most of the time the social workers will approve, especially in light of the physical abuse he seems to have suffered from the foster care facility.
Jason held her close.
And in the meantime, you might try searching his social media or search his internet history. He might have looked at places to go before giving up his phone. And pray Owen was speaking the truth in his video about his mother not raising a fool.
The officers gave her their contact information before pulling out of Ford's driveway. Rachel shivered, realizing for the first time that it had started to snow.
Let's go back to my house,
Jason suggested.
I'm going into the city to look for him.
Jason stood in front of her.
Let's go back to my house and strategize. See if we can pinpoint where Owen might have gone. Officer Bailey was right. Owen might have looked something up on the internet that can clue us in. We'll get some help and go search for him together and cover more ground than what the two of us can do alone.
Her teeth chattered. Much as she wanted to leave right then, what Jason said made sense. Jason forced her into a hotel after 2 in the morning. Nathan stayed behind at the estate and checked Rachel's house twice, just in case Owen went home. Glenn and Trent took the uptown and downtown subways, searching the stations. Mary and Monica spent their time on the phone, calling shelters and hospitals, although Jason wasn't about to tell Rachel about the hospital search. Yet when Mary mentioned doing it, he agreed. The inch of snow they'd gotten overnight wasn't something anyone should be sleeping in. He liked to think Owen would be more resourceful. Jason reminded himself that the kid was only 15. Underestimating the power of a cold New York winter would certainly put just about any of them in a hospital emergency room. They managed less than 5 hours of sleep before they were up and at it again. Searching the streets for one child may have been difficult in the dark, but in the sea of people walking around in the morning, it was impossible. They stopped their search at 8 in the morning so they could meet Clive at the courthouse for the emergency hearing he'd managed to have placed on the calendar the day before. Clive took one look at Rachel's disheveled state and frowned.
It's always better to show up in court looking your best,
he told her. She stepped toward him, her lips in a straight line.
We have been searching for Owen from the minute he went missing. Wearing a skirt and a smile isn't my priority.
Clive held up his hands, lowered his head.
I'm sorry. I know. I just want you to win this, so there is no reason to return here.
Jason grasped her hand in his and felt her squeeze.
How is this going to go?
He asked Clive.
There are 8 cases being heard today.
What number are we? Rachel asked.
6.
When will we be called?
I can't predict that. The cases could go quickly if, in fact, the families before us have come to some agreement and the judge signs and pushes papers. Or there could be witness calling procedures that push us into the afternoon.
So I have to wait here while Owen is out there somewhere? Clive looked to both of them.
That's the way this works.
Rachel released Jason's hand and started to walk in circles.
Hey,
he said, trying to calm her down.
Glenn and Trent are still out there. Glenn found a private investigator who is an expert on teenage runaways. Ford's parents are joining the search once school is out.
She looked away, and he ducked to make her meet his eyes.
We're going to find him.
She held it together and leaned her head on his shoulder. Jason folded her into his arms and listened to her strangled breathing. He was grateful that she didn't start crying again. Clive sighed.
Okay, I'm going to speak with the Coleman's attorney. I need you two to stay close.
The mention of the Coleman's name had Rachel's head off Jason's shoulder and searching the lobby. Although Jason had never met the Colemans, they were easy to spot when Rachel's hatred landed on the couple. Owen described them perfectly. The hag had pretentiousness written all over her, and the husband looked embarrassed to be there. Jason had to physically hold Rachel back.
That is only going to make things worse.
He turned her in the opposite direction and listened to her mutter under her breath about the couple while he grabbed them both a cup of coffee. 30 minutes later, Clive joined them again.
Well?
Clive shook his head.
They won't see reason. Mr. Yanez told me they believe you know exactly where Owen is, and this is all an orchestrated plot to convince the court to leave him with you.
Orchestrated? Rachel pounded her fist on the cafeteria table. How dare they?
That's outrageous, Jason said.
Outrageous or not, we will have to prove they're wrong.
I thought the law was centered around being innocent until proven guilty. Jason was pretty sure Clive laughed.
You said you had a video?
Rachel produced Owen's phone. Clive watched the video and wrote a few notes on his legal pad. He asked questions about the night before and the discussions with Lionel and Ford. There was some relief because those stories could be substantiated by a third and fourth party and therefore wouldn't be thrown out. Clive left them alone for a few minutes so that he could check the courtroom to see the progression of the other cases. When he returned, he announced they were still on the second case.
Can all of this go away today?
Jason asked him.
It could.
He didn't sound hopeful.
Tell us the possible outcomes.
Clive made a strange face.
I doubt this will all go away today. If the father was here and Owen was present to state his desires, maybe. But Tarek Jr. is out of the country, according to his parents, and unreachable because he's shooting pictures in the Middle East somewhere.
But they can't testify for him, Jason said.
No, but the court will most likely delay any permanent ruling until TJ can be found and come in.
So what can we expect today?
My ultimate goal is to have Owen placed back in your home.
That sounded good.
And charges against Rachel for not following a court order she never received?
Jason's mention of that information prompted Clive to start digging in his files. He removed a piece of paper and turned it toward Rachel.
Is that your signature?
Her face went white. No.
Clive pointed to it again.
That isn't you.
She shook her head.
What is it?
Jason asked.
It's Owen's.
Clive turned the paper around.
You're sure?
Yep.
She turned to Jason.
Why would he not tell me about this?
I don't know, hon. Maybe he was scared.
Clive put the paper back in his briefcase.
Okay, so when I ask you if the signature is yours in front of the judge, you're going to say no. You are not going to reveal whose it is.
Rachel blinked. You want me to lie?
I'm telling you to avoid offering that information.
And if Yanez asks?
If he asks directly if it's Owen's...
Clive waved a hand in the air as if he were on the fence as to his advice. Rachel lowered her voice.
You want me to lie?
I would never suggest you lie. Just hold some truth back without perjuring yourself.
If the court thinks Owen received the certified letter, then they will believe you saw it. At that point, you defied a court order by taking Owen out of the country, and you're now at risk of charges for doing so.
I never saw a letter.
I believe you, but me believing you isn't going to help in there.
He waved at the bank of windows that led to the courtroom they'd be heard in.
Wow.
Clive sat back in his chair, sipped his coffee.
Don't be so surprised. These walls were built on lies. Only half the people in here are telling the truth. The other half are not.
I thought there were laws against that.
There are. You spent half a day in New York's finest locked unit. My guess is you didn't see anyone in there on a perjury charge.
Chapter 23. Rachel ran her hand through her hair for the thousandth time. It was past lunch, and the court was just about to be called back in session. There was only one case in front of them. She leaned against Jason on a bench outside the courtroom. It just dawned on me that I haven't called into work for 2 days. Jason's shoulders shook with mirth.
I've got you covered.
But you're not my immediate supervisor. I should have spoken with Gerald. He kissed the side of her head.
I told him he can expect to see you when he sees me.
She laced her fingers through his. The thought of going through all of this alone made her physically ill. Did he feel obligated? Every move he'd made felt sincere, but how could she really know? He'd fallen into her drama the moment she was taken away in his office building. She'd leaned on him like a crutch, a life preserver in a tsunami.
I'm keeping you from your life, she said aloud.
Whoa. Hey.
He pulled away far enough to look at her.
You didn't bring any of this on yourself.
I'm invested in Owen. You're not.
His smile fell.
I'm going to forget you said that.
She placed a hand on the side of his face.
I feel guilty for taking you away from your life.
Stop.
She closed her lips and held her breath.
From the moment we met, I became invested in you. Owen is a part of you. So stop feeling guilty.
Rachel pushed back the tears in her eyes.
I don't think I could have done this without you, Jason.
You don't have to.
He kissed her briefly. She sniffled and pulled back the waterworks.
Where is he, Jason? Is he hungry? Cold?
Jason didn't seem as concerned as she was.
I can't help but think we're looking in the wrong place.
They didn't get a chance to talk more before Clive walked up.
We're on!
Rachel filled her lungs and let it all out in a rush.
I won't let anything happen to him, Em. I promise you.
The smell of antiseptic and sickness filled each fiber of Rachel's being. She knew every name of every employee on the oncology floor of the hospital. Unlike the doctors, the nurses had told her that Emily wouldn't make it through the night. The light in Em's eyes had gone out 2 days before, and Rachel and Owen kept a constant presence in the room. She wouldn't die alone. It was a vow the two of them had made when they knew there was no saving her. Rachel and Owen had cried every moment they found themselves alone. But when in Emily's room, they held it together. When one of them felt the need to break down, they would leave her side. Rachel had an understanding with the nurses that when Owen needed to step away, one of them was by his side. And if he needed to be alone, they kept their distance, but there was always one eye on him. But at this moment, the second time Rachel promised Emily she'd take care of Owen as if he were her own, Rachel was alone, and the tears silently fell.
He will be my son from this day forward. I will be there for him when you pass. I will be there for him when he graduates from high school. I will send him to college and welcome his wife into our lives. Your grandchildren will be mine.
I will do everything in my power to be there for him. For you.
Rachel held Emily's frail hand. The difference between the two of them was more than black and white. It was healthy and deathly thin, alive and on one's last breath of life.
I know you're in pain. I know you're holding on. Let go, Em. I've got him. I promise you.
Within the hour, Emily was gone. Rachel swallowed her memory and the pain it punched in her heart. She'd already broken her promise, and it hadn't been a year. With her chin high, she entered the courtroom and sat on the side opposite the Colemans. Clive sat beside her and whispered,
"Don't look at them. Don't show emotion toward them. Don't say a thing until I have you on that stand."
She swallowed with a nod. Looking behind her, she saw Jason on the other side of the wooden rail. He offered a supportive nod. The bailiff called the room to order, and the judge walked in. Rachel thought they were going to make everyone stand, but they didn't. Thrown off, all Rachel saw was the color of the judge's skin. She was black. An African-American woman who earned her place in a robe, laying judgment on others' lives. Never before in Rachel's life had she looked upon the skin of someone else and felt dread. Rachel couldn't help it. Would race play a significant role in this? Would the judge's decision be swayed because Owen was black? She wanted to cry.
Oh, God.
The Colemans looked smug.
Don't look at them.
Her eyes found the city crest and focused on it. Without hearing, Rachel recognized that her counsel and that of the Colemans introduced themselves for the purpose of the court reporter. Judge Sherman looked at both parties and started by speaking to the Colemans.
"I've read the argument for custody of Owen Moreau from Mr. and Mrs. Coleman."
She turned her eyes on Rachel.
"And that from the counsel of Miss Price. I have to admit, I have more questions than answers. Have the parties come to any agreement?"
Mr. Yanez spoke first.
"No, Your Honor, we have not."
Judge Sherman looked at Clive.
"We have not, Your Honor."
"All right, then,"
the judge said with a sigh.
"Let's proceed."
Clive stayed standing while Mr. Yanez and the Coleman sat.
"Your Honor, before we move on, you need to know that the child in this case, Owen Moreau, has fled the foster care system and is unaccounted for right now."
The judge looked at both parties.
"I assume the authorities are notified?"
"Yes. My client was with them most of the night and all morning, searching for him."
Rachel clenched her fists.
"Let's see how quickly we can move through this."
Clive sat down, seemingly happy with the judge's comments. Rachel listened while Mr. Yanez opened the Coleman's case and entered a plea that the judge offer them temporary custody of Owen until TJ returned from Syria. Yanez stated that she was a flight risk, as demonstrated by the documentation already presented into evidence regarding her recent flight to Central America with Owen the previous week. Clive leaned over and whispered,
"They have the burden of proof now."
She kept silent and tried to keep her face emotionless as they spoke. Yanez called D'Adria to the stand. Rachel tried not to stare as the woman walked by. She stated her name and swore an oath that she would tell the truth. But the first statement out of her mouth was a lie.
"We didn't know we had a grandson until after his mother had passed."
Rachel bit her tongue.
"And what did you do when you found out?"
Mr. Yanez asked.
"We contacted Rachel Price immediately."
At least that part was true.
"We told her we would lovingly take Owen with us."
"What happened then?"
D'Adria looked everywhere but at Rachel.
"Nothing. We heard nothing."
"Miss Price took a job on the East Coast,"
Is that right?
Yes. A job that gave her access to international travel on a moment's notice.
Was this concerning to you?
Of course. She threatened to leave the country if we pursued custody of Owen.
Rachel grabbed Clive's hand.
That's a lie. I never said that to them.
He shushed her.
What happened after Miss Price moved here?
Well, she made it look like she was trying to allow a relationship between Owen and us, but she never allowed us time alone with him.
Rachel leaned over.
He didn't want me to leave him alone.
Clive held a hand in the air and made a note on his pad.
You've stated, in your complaint, that Miss Price is not providing a safe environment for your grandson.
Mrs. Coleman shook her head.
The home she's in is falling down. The paint on the walls is peeling. Owen has complained about a headache every time we have seen him.
Are you concerned for his health?
I am. So is his father.
Objection, Clive argued. Sustained. Mrs. Coleman, you cannot testify on your son's opinion,
Judge Sherman announced. Yanez took a breath and asked the question another way.
Did your son express concern about his son's health?
Yes.
Yanez paused and then moved on.
Can you tell us the events leading up to your plea for the court to remove Owen from Miss Price's home?
My husband and I have been trying to establish a relationship with our grandson since we learned of him. Our son, TJ, Derek Jr., Owen's father, returned for Christmas and told us he wanted custody of his son. When we told Miss Price our intentions, she became irate and refused to answer our calls after that.
All lies. Rachel looked at the faces of the others in the courtroom to find several people buying the fabricated story.
What happened then?
Mr. Yanez stood behind his desk and asked questions while Clive listened and scribbled notes.
She threatened to leave the country and told us we would never see our grandson again.
Rachel shook her head. Clive placed a hand over hers and offered a curt nod in warning. Her eyes pleaded with him. She grabbed the pen from his hand and wrote on his pad with a heavy hand, "Not true."
Is that when you went to the courts and petitioned for custody?
Yes,
D'Adria said.
When did you become aware that Miss Price and Owen had left the country?
I saw a broadcast of Rachel speaking on behalf of the company she works for when they were in Costa Rica.
Is that part of her job?
Yanez asked.
Objection!
Clive shouted.
Sustained.
Mr. Yanez redirected.
Where was Owen while Miss Price was in Costa Rica?
In Costa Rica with her.
How did you determine that?
Owen has a social media thing. Instagram. He posted a picture of a beach.
Mr. Yanez lifted a picture snapped from a phone and handed it to the bailiff.
What does Owen say along with this image?
Rachel's eyes followed the picture as it traveled to the judge. She glanced at it and then put it aside, no emotion on her face.
It says, "The next time I come back here, I'm staying."
What did that mean to you, Mrs. Coleman?
The woman's lip started to quiver, and she glanced at the judge.
It meant I would never see my grandson again.
Thank you, Mrs. Coleman.
Mr. Yanez sat, and all eyes moved to Clive.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Coleman.
Her quivering lip disappeared, and nerves in the form of a single tapping finger instantly started to show.
Good afternoon.
Clive smiled.
You have testified, under oath, that you didn't know you had a grandson until after Owen's mother had passed away?
She nodded. Judge Sherman spoke.
You have to answer with a yes or no, Mrs. Coleman. The court reporter cannot write down that you nodded.
Yes, D'Adria lied.
How did you find out about Owen?
My son told us.
TJ?
That's right.
Did your son tell you about your grandson before or after Emily Moreau's funeral?
After.
How do you know it was after?
Because he attended Miss Moreau's services.
So your son had been in contact with Miss Moreau.
D'Adria looked at her lawyer.
I'm not sure.
Objection.
The judge didn't rule quickly, so Mr. Yanez continued his argument.
How can Mrs. Coleman speculate on her son's knowledge?
Sustained.
Where is your son now?
Clive asked. The last I heard, he was in Syria. For work.
Does your son travel a lot?
He is a photojournalist. Traveling to places most of us avoid is his job.
You sound very proud of your son.
Clive smiled.
I am.
How long has your son traveled for work?
Ever since he graduated from college. Almost 20 years.
Would you say Syria is a safe country?
Mrs. Coleman shook her head.
No. I pray for his safety every night.
Probably not a place he'd take his son.
No! TJ would never put Owen in danger. Clive smiled and turned to the judge.
No further questions?
Rachel sighed when Clive sat down.
Any other witnesses?
Judge Sherman asked Mr. Yanez.
No, Your Honor. Mr. Redshaw, you have our attention.
He patted Rachel's hand and stood before calling her to the stand. The vulnerable short stride to the bench, where she sat behind a microphone, was the longest walk she'd ever taken. She vowed to tell the truth, and then took her seat. Clive walked around the desk and tilted his head with a smile.
You look like you've had a long night,
he began. I have.
Why?
We have been searching the streets of New York ever since Owen went missing. Clive looked around the room.
Who is we?
The Fairchilds. Myself. She looked at the clock. By now, Owen's friends are out of school and their families have joined the search.
Is it hard for you to be in this courtroom right now?
She nodded. We should be out there looking for him, and not in here fighting over him.
Objection, Your Honor. If Mr. Redshaw felt the need to postpone this hearing, he could have asked at the beginning.
Clive looked at the judge.
Leaving Owen in the foster care system longer than necessary will prompt the boy to flee again once he's found, which I will establish during this testimony. Overruled,
Judge Sherman said. Mr. Yanez sat down.
Miss Price, tell me about your relationship with Owen.
I've known Owen since he was 5. His mother and I became best friends shortly after we met.
Can you describe Emily Moreau for the court?
Rachel couldn't help the emotion that caught in her throat.
Em was, kind, loving, very down to earth.
A saint?
No, of course not. She was very real and didn't sugarcoat life just to please others.
What can you tell us about her relationship with TJ? Objection!
Mr. Yanez shouted.
Sustained.
Clive didn't miss a beat.
When did you meet TJ?
Owen was in 1st grade. I remember that because Emily and I were making 30 paper pioneer hats for his class. TJ came over to Emily and Owen's home to see his son.
So TJ knew he had a son?
Yes, since his birth. I saw TJ once more when Owen was maybe 10, and then again at Emily's funeral.
Would you say that Emily and TJ had a friendly relationship?
Rachel smiled. Yes, they were very adult about Owen. Emily never pressed TJ to be a full-time father, and from what I saw, he never tried. Rachel held her breath, thinking Mr. Yanez was going to object. He didn't.
Did Owen...